You're listening to WKXL in the Morning. I'm your host, AJ Kerstead. It's time for New Hampshire Business Update with Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. You can get more from them at nhbr.com. So, Jeff, let's jump right into it. The big thing that's been taking up so much of the news cycle this past couple weeks is the supply chain issue. From California to China to New Hampshire, it's all the way along the chain, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, you could say it's happening right in your local supermarket.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. I mean,
it's everywhere, crazy. Actually.
It's whether it's consumer goods. I mean, yeah, you say you go to the supermarket, you're not finding everything you're expecting to see. No. You go to the biggest of grocery stores, you go to Target, you go to Walmart, you go to your local convenience store. Certain items aren't there, and it's for a reason.
Exactly. And, we don't want to focus on the holiday shopping season that much, but it's coming up on us. And across the board, people in the retail industry are saying shop early, because it's very likely you won't. If you're going to be waiting for even three weeks or 4 weeks before, you're going to be disappointed that you might not find everything you're looking for.
I was even said, curiosity, Apple has a new iPad that just came out. It's literally back ordered until sometime in December. It literally says December 8th to December 20th. If you want the latest, greatest, it's even things coming all the way from China for technology. The silicon shortage certainly has not really fixed itself.
No, there's been a concerted effort to increase the production of chips, because that's been a major shortage, especially in the automotive industry.
Right.
And actually, we had a story just the other day about Albany International, which is based in Rochester here, and they produce a lot of products for not just the aeronautics industry, which is their biggest concern, but they also do it for the automotive industry. And you know, they've been doing well. I mean, they're making money, but they could be doing much better because they have this major shortage in the supply they can get of chips, and they don't make the chips that they use that the automotive industry is using. But because the automotive industry doesn't have the chips, and I'm making the cars, so they don't need the products that Albany International is producing for them. So it's complicated, and I think it's really interesting to me because, you know, I've been a business journalist for almost 40 years now. And I'll tell you, the phrase supply chain was never in the general lexicon until this year. And I think it's really very telling.
Yeah, it is definitely. I mean, it's been kind of interesting, especially saying the automotive industry, like they're selling a ton of cars right now. Like they're going gangbusters.
They could sell probably twice as many, but they just don't have the supply.
Yeah, they don't have the supply. So that's long term going to help them, going to hurt them. And it seems to me they're going to hit a bottleneck at some point where they're going to run out of supply, and that's going to hurt local dealers.
Well, I think that's part of the problem, because, you know, the related concern, and it's a big concern, is inflation that has been right now directly related to these supply chain concerns that began during COVID. If you remember, you know, we had a look at what would happen when the supply chain gets completely stopped. And that was early days of COVID, when, you know, you couldn't find toilet paper or antibacterial stuff and soap and things. And the prices went through the roof on that stuff in many cases. So we're having this on a larger scale, and it's all related to the pandemic, because a lot of places shut down and they couldn't find the workers all around the world. And we're paying the price right now for it. There's, you know, some people are very pessimistic that this is going to last several years. Others are saying that it's probably going to, we'll make through for, it'll take, you know, several more months, maybe a year, but we'll get through it. I don't know. I'm not an economist. And actually, I don't think the economists really know anyway. They're just making wild guesses. Or educated guesses. Let me put it. Yeah, educated with a degree guesses.
Yeah.
But I think that's something that, you know, this is where, that's why we ourselves, the two of us and people listening, are feeling all this.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, hopefully the lull that happens post Christmas will kind of let everything rebuild a bit. But
yes.
I mean, like Walmart, I read this morning, they're doing a Black Friday event every week starting this week. And it, to me, it doesn't, it, the, uh, you think their evil corporatist hat on right now.
Yeah.
It seems like, oh, they're trying to cash in. They're just trying to get all their money and extend Christmas even more. But I have a sneaking suspicion it's an economic decision where they're going to be hope to spread out consumers over a couple months instead of all at once.
I think that you're very right about that. And I have to say that's really, that's what they're doing, I think that they know that sometime when the traditional Black Friday starts is when things start disappearing off the shelves. And if they wait till then to start selling stuff, it's not going to be available.
Yeah.
So, a lot of smart companies have stocked up their inventory as much as they can. But right now they can't get to replenish their inventory because, it's still backed up. You look at the photos of just the ports in the United States where there are just hundreds, thousands of these huge shipping containers just sitting at a dock because they're not unloaded yet. And it's because it's not just about supply. It's also about getting people to get the containers off the ship. They have a shortage of workers there. There's a shortage of truckers. By some estimates, this country's 100,000 short of truckers. And New Hampshire alone is short, hundreds and hundreds of truckers, if not more. And this is something that really has to be, addressed, but really in the short term, it's got to be just we got to weather through it because addressing it is going to be a long-term thing. The state right. already started a program. We're going to put some money into training, trying to encourage people to go into the trucking industry.
You're already in a labor shortage.
Doesn't happen overnight.
Shortage. It's going to take a while to retrain. It's going to take time for them. People feel incentivized to even apply for the job. Maybe they're in a pretty good place. They did pretty well through COVID or found a way to get through COVID in a way that they reevaluated their what they want to do with their life. And now they're like, do I want to be in a truck? And some people will eventually get there if the pays get right. But it's once again, you're talking 6 months to a year.
Yeah, because you can't just go into a semi and start driving it.
You don't want me driving it.
That would cause a lot more worse problems than the supply chain problems if we have untrained people driving semis on the highways. So, we have to really deal with this, and it's something that this is what happens when we've been through a really earth-shaking. Problem as the pandemic. I mean, this is really what we have to remember. This is because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and the economic damage the pandemic has done is still it's still with us.
I mean, California is still a disaster of lockdowns and reopenings, and that's where so much of the nation's supply chain from Asia comes from. And I feel like people always consider Silicon Valley and all that being the be-all end-all of California, but everything from Asia goes through.
The port of Los Angeles, the port of Long Beach. Absolutely. Pretty much. And, on the East Coast, we have a similar situation going, our big story and the issue that just came out today is on digital on NHBR.com is on what's going on with the supply chain in New Hampshire. And it's interesting to note that, we have a port in New Hampshire, in Portsmouth, but they have nothing to do with unloading containers because they can't take containers at the ports. It's the smallest port on the East Coast.
Oh, wow.
So what they do is take bulk delivery. So it's mostly salt. If anybody's been down to the port, you see the big salt piles. Interestingly, there's no shortage of supply of salt, but there is a shortage of containers to ship them.
Oh, wow.
Ship the salt because... also being used to ship salt on the same containers that are used to ship coal, which this is salt we use on the road. So don't worry about it. It's not table salt. But because there's such a demand for more coal now because there's a shortage of natural gas and other, cost of natural gas and oil is going up. Companies are once again asking for use of, utilities are using oil, around the world, the United States, of using coal. So the containers that would normally be shipping the salt are shipping coal. So the salt's not arriving, and it affects the whole process.
And I'd imagine that over time, these shipping containers kind of shift around through various industries, even deeper than that. And with thousands and thousands of ships stuck off the coast on either the east or west, especially the west coast, I mean, that's got to really slow down just the ability for basic resources. Like, what are we going to put stuff in?
And actually, you know, this is the thing we have to remember. We're talking about the United States, but this is true around the world. In England, they're having terrible shortages. Some of it related to Brexit, to be fair, but also they've had major labor shortages, and they themselves are down tens of thousands of truckers who just aren't there. They've had issues where they can't even get people to deliver enough gasoline to the petrol stations in England. And this is really, it's not just the United States. We're not like an isolated economy on this. It's the whole world.
Yeah, it's a total global economy. I mean, that was very prevalent, as you noticed in the beginning when China shut down, that nothing was coming out of China to the United States.
Exactly.
People's short-term memory with how complex everything is, kind of feel like they kind of forgot that, oh yeah, everything is still going around the world. We didn't magically create all these warehouses in the United States and manufacturers in the United States during this, because it was impossible to create all these businesses that quickly.
And you know, in terms of creating more manufacturing base in the United States, that's a generation-long project if we're really serious about it. And that's not gonna, it's not gonna happen in one presidential term. It's not going to happen in five presidential terms. It's going to be longer than that. And I don't even know if this country is really serious about really going down that road again.
It's a big cultural shift. I mean, there's been this drive over the last God knows how many decades to big city centers like Boston, San Francisco, New York, and such. This doing that would be going the opposite direction. So where people live would entirely shift, which has been a huge issue in New Hampshire of late with housing prices exploding and not enough housing even existing in good parts of the area. I mean, Manchester is building a lot, it seems like. But outside of there, there's so many components when it comes to government regulation, when it comes to having a trained workforce that can create the housing and then the manufacturing. Yeah. I mean,
well, and not only that, you know, really, we have for many, two or three decades now, really evolved into like what they call a knowledge economy.
Right.
It's not a manufacturing economy. We would have to basically turn the clock back on in some ways, because we've been training all these people to take part in the knowledge economy. And as we said, there's a shortage of workers, so you can't have both. You're not going to be working at some Silicon Valley or Route 128 office in the daytime, and at night you're going to be working, you know, at a manufacturing plant in Lynn, Mass or something. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, and there's been this big push. I mean, especially I'm 34, being a millennial, I mean, the drive to send people to getting the four-year degree versus an associate's or a specific skill-based job wasn't really pushed as an option.
It was misguided. If you looking back at it, you know, because you know, I think there was a big thought that this is, you know, the more education you have, the better job you're going to get, and that was true in the older economy.
Right.
In the previous economy, that was very true, but we don't have the same economy anymore. And the skills people require are required now are more similar to what it used to be like, you know, in terms of, you know, people could go out of high school and get a really good job at a manufacturing plant. But now you can't do that because you can't learn in high school, but you can't learn in college either necessarily. You have to just get the skill. Like I know people who just go get certificates. To show, you know, whether in computer science and all kinds of stuff they're looking for, just specific skills, because it's an evolving industry anyway.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to just go online too, all these services. I mean, LinkedIn bought lynda.com, which is one of the biggest online training resources in the world, and they bought it up. Now everyone goes to LinkedIn. You can get those services. I don't know if that hurt their numbers, because who wants to go on LinkedIn? But
I know.
but YouTube, I mean, anyone can now go on there and pick up new skills. I mean, that's how I picked up photography. It's like I had a video background, but I didn't know anything about stills. And I went on YouTube and I learned a whole bunch of stuff. And over time, I picked up a new skill, and it doesn't really work that way necessarily in manufacturing. You need to actually be in the field learning and experiencing, and if you don't have that older generation to kind of steer you in the right way to put together certain things or work on a supply chain, it's totally different.
No, wait, this is a crisis, and it's not just a crisis of prices. I didn't mean to rhyme it that way, well, it's not just a crisis of supply. It's a crisis for the future of the economy, at least in the short term. You know, we have to really be prepared to weather this. And, you know, it's not going to be the easiest thing in the world. But, you know, the problem is politicians on both sides are going to try to make hay out of it. And I think that's going to not be to anybody disservice by just pointing fingers at people and blaming, because it's not. I am not afraid to blame politicians for anything, but this is not the fault of any politicians. I don't care who they're going to say it is. It's not. This is not how it happened.
This is stuff that takes generations to happen. And it's exactly. No one could have known back in the 90s when the dot-com bubble happened that, oh, down the road, your entire economy is going to be based on this online resource that doesn't necessarily help you live and make food.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, you guys speak to all sorts of different people. I mean, is anyone out there having solutions that maybe would be the first step to kind of get us in the right direction?
Well, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's people who are talking about, you know, increasing the manufacturing base in New Hampshire, but that's not a solution. And really the solutions right now are basically being prepared and trying everything you can to get your products for your own business. I don't think anyone's taking a bigger look at it. I think they're doing that in Washington, but I don't know how much they can do to because you can address different aspects of it. You can address the ports slowdown. Then you have to address the shortage of truckers float. You know, that's not just these are, it's like you can't put your finger in the dam and expect that the leak's going to, there's leaks everywhere.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anyone who's had any really, macro look at, you know, idea of how to take care of this thing. I've heard of solutions, you know, obviously training more truckers. That's a great idea. Getting more workers in the various industry. That's a great idea. But, you know, raising wages is another way, you know, people come back to we've seen that in New Hampshire, the unemployment claims are dropping like a rock. And that's because more people are entering the workforce, but it's still not enough people.
Yeah. And people moved. I mean, people didn't necessarily stay in the state and they ended up going back home with family. They discover, I mean, it's kind of the positive and negative to what happened with it is that I feel like a lot more people realize their traditional family values from when they're younger. And maybe I want to be closer to mom and dad. Yeah. And
some people had to be closer also.
Yeah, they had to be because they didn't have a job. They needed that assistance with the family, with the kid. They maybe need a place to live
we can't keep forgetting that's New Hampshire's major issue is that housing availability, affordable housing availability. That's a major, major issue in New Hampshire that has a lot of ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel like it'd be more housing is kind of the solution, or is it just a more systemic
issue?
Well,
it's a solution for New Hampshire to attract more people here, more affordable housing.
Yeah.
You know, you can have more housing, but, you know, if it's not affordable, it's not going to answer the question. So that's, you know, this is something that's an ongoing concern. It's been it's really been a concern. I'd say I've been here in the state since 1981. I think it's been a concern since at least the late 80s. And it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. It's also something that's not going to be addressed overnight. But, you know, I just as an observer, I'm thinking, you know, we had the opportunity to address this many, many years ago. And people just, you know, turned a blind eye to it and didn't do anything about it. So now we're really paying the price. And the price is very high.
Yes, it is.
For affordable housing now.
Yeah, I mean,
so quote unquote affordable housing.
Speaking personally in Concord as a middle income individual with a family, there's extremes. Like there's a bunch of housing for people that don't have very much money. They're lower income people. And there's a lot of very expensive apartments that are going to be $3,000 a month. I can't even fathom being able to afford. It's more than half of what I make a month. It's really going to take a long time for them to sort out that pricing structure.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's an issue that's being addressed. But I would say it's been piecemeal at this point. And, you know, people in Concord have pat themselves on the back for passing some legislation last year. But it's really just the tip of the iceberg what they're addressing. It's a major problem that's been a concern for a long time to a lot of people in many different aspects of New Hampshire's, culture and economy and political world.
Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's It's great talking to you, AJ. Take care.
You listen to WKXL in the morning on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. Get more from New Hampshire Business Review at nhbr.com. You get more from WKXL in the morning at nhtalkradio.com.